This is the ACIA New Horizons podcast. Everything we discuss is for the analyst, to the analyst, and by the analyst.
Today I'm joined by Sandhu Fahy, worked for 10 years at the United Nations International Criminal Tribunal, working with high volumes of call data and project managing the development of courtroom software that enabled live analysis and a mapping of call data. However, before then, Andrew spent 10 years with the Metropolitan Police Service on serious unorganised crime and terrorism investigations. I'm also joined by Jenna Holloway, who has 11 years of experience in law enforcement, working as an analyst at both South Yorkshire and West Yorkshire Police. Jenna has also worked on serious and organised criminality, including human trafficking, child sexual exploitation, international money laundering, and the importation of supply Class A drugs and firearms. Not only this, Jenna has also experienced in evidential telecoms analysis and also spent many years conducting telecoms analysis during live time investigation. Both of you, I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you very much. It's very good to be here.
Right. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
So tell me about you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I'm currently a trainer at Forensic Analytics. I think you've given quite a good overview of my background, but I'll run through it in a bit more detail if you like. So I mentioned I live in Sheffield. I came here for university many moons ago and I studied law at uni. And when I graduated, I went straight into South Yorkshire Police. I worked in Doncaster, BCU, Basic Crime Unit. And what I did there was I worked as an analyst in local issues. So we were looking at hotspot analysis, crime pattern analysis, that sort of stuff. And when I worked there, perhaps I was there for a number of years, I moved on to West Yorkshire Police. And when I went into West Yorkshire Police, I went in as an analyst and I moved into the ROCU, what we call the ROCU, the Regional Organised Crime Unit. And I worked mainly on serious and organised criminality. And when I was there, I was working almost solely on telecoms, on the phones, all the time on the phones, looking at telecoms data, looking at call data, looking at cell site data, and sort of trawling through that data and trying to establish certain things about our subjects. I was trying to attribute telephone numbers to end users. I suppose that's the first thing that I was doing. I was trying to identify who is the end user of a given telephone number that's involved in this particular investigation. And I was identifying vehicles, significant addresses, all that sort of thing. But my work there initially was all evidential. So there was a possibility that I'd be in the courtroom at some stage representing my evidence that I'd been working on for perhaps months or perhaps years, depending on the investigation. And I say serious and organised criminality because it was that. And it was a regional unit, so it meant that it was criminality that impacted on one or more of our police areas. So perhaps the criminality was South Yorkshire based, but with an impact on West Yorkshire, but with an impact on North Yorkshire, and perhaps an impact on Humberside as well. So it was a regional organised crime unit. But then I moved into what we call one of our more sensitive intelligence units, and I was working on lifetime investigations predominantly. So similar sort of stuff. All comms related, it was on the phones, day in, day out, looking at telecoms data, but it was in a more sensitive environment. Similar sorts of criminality, but a completely different perspective, if you like. And that's me, really. And then I took some time out, and I always say this, I took some time out and I went travelling, filled my backpack with all my worldly belongings and started trekking in the Himalayas for a couple of months and then sort of went on a world tour. And then I came back to England and joined Andrew and started training law enforcement in comms data predominantly, but other areas as well, like our software and so on.
But full of wonderful, things in terms of intelligence analysis. And we'll touch on that, Jenna, actually shortly. Thank you so much for that. Andrew, yourself, how did you, you've had a diverse career path as well, haven't you?
Thank you. Yeah, I've been in a few different places. Yeah, I started quite a while ago now in the mid 90s working on criminology at university. I was studying for a master's degree, but simultaneously working as a tutor as well. And I found myself speaking to police officers quite a lot who were working on their own studies. Down at Portsmouth University, there's the Institute of Criminal Justice Studies, and that's where I studied and worked, and came up against or came up talking to police officers who were doing their best to study criminology and understand policing from an academic point of view and to put it into practice. A fascinating area, and I really, really did find myself desperate to get into this world myself professionally. So having left academia, it took a year or so to get into the Metropolitan Police as an intelligence analyst. And they were in the process of really upscaling the intelligence analysis function at the Met Police then, around the late 90s and into 2000. Indeed, through the early 2000s, there was a lot of recruitment and there was a lot of competition for jobs there in the Met Police. And so the police really augmented its intelligence function. Intelligence-led policing was a relatively new concept. And there was a big drive to improve the way that everything was done within policing with respect to intelligence-led policing. So strategic approaches to policing, but also really augmenting the operational side of things as well. And I did a great deal of strategic work in the first year at the Met, the first year and a half. But then I moved on to operational work and found myself in a very similar world to the world that Jenna described, long-term criminal investigations into organized crime, drug importations, kidnaps, that sort of thing, with a national or an international angle to it. And telecoms really was the focus. There was a lot of data coming in to those investigations, surveillance logs, records from all manner of different sources, and a lot of it was telecoms. And the job was piecing it together and trying to uncover the picture, trying to uncover the story, working with those investigators, those detectives, to uncover the story and try to, as best as we could, predict where people might be the next day or predict what they might do next and catch them in the act. Fascinating time, a lot of exposure to comms. That led me on to terrorism investigations. The mid-2000s, the 2005-77 inquiry in particular required a lot of work and a lot of work on telecoms. And there was a lot of work that went on into the telephones used by those bombers and other terrorist plotters around those years. And it was very much an area for growth. So I spent several years there as well within the counterterrorism command, and that led neatly on to international terrorism investigations. So around late 2009, I went on to work for the United Nations, and I stayed with the UN for 10 years working on an international tribunal that worked on a particularly egregious terrorism case that took place in the early 2000s. Huge amounts of telecoms data, a huge amount of intelligence analysis to take place. So the challenge really was applying intelligence analysis techniques to vast amounts of data and helping everyone come to some conclusions about just exactly what had gone on and what might go on in the future. And then after 10 years away, I came back and took up this job with Forensic Analytics, which is a company really devoted to the art and the science of improving efficiency within policing, within operational investigations and prosecutions, helping law enforcement achieve clarity with the vast amounts of data that they have at their fingertips. It's great to have it all at your fingertips, but then processing it and getting into the analysis is the challenge, and making that analysis as efficient as possible is the challenge that we've set ourselves to.
Yes, absolutely. And I think with intelligence, we are, you know, information rich, as I would say, and with past events, we've always had the information, not always all of it, but we've always had a good amount of information to base our, you know, our intelligence actions upon. But it's also dealing with uncertainty. And when I say that, I think of analysts and how they deal with that, because of there is a lack of training and resources around how information is, you know, generated and operated through the National Intelligence Model and other frameworks we have. So you actually, Andrew, you led me on to the next question of what forensic analytics is all about, and you've very well clearly explained what it is. And you've got a great team under you, and obviously if everyone goes onto the website, they can see who's within it and the roles each of you play. So I think, Jenna, you've got a different role within forensic analytics, right?
Well, I'm a trainer within forensic analytics. Andrew's the training director. So I, in fact, when Andrew and I both started, we were both training, I think, Andrew, weren't we, down in the Met for quite some time. Andrew is more involved in the strategic business more now, and I'm still doing a lot of training, but obviously not face to face at the moment. Obviously all the training now is online, covering topics from, you know, communications data, but also covering our software and how analysts can use our software CSAS in their workplace.
Yes. So I'm aware, because Andrew, I spoke with you before, I'm aware of the, some of the things you do within your organisation, but I want to ask you both, was there a time then in your career that you found a gap with the way intelligence is generated, which made you work for such an organisation that can help train individuals within this area?
Yes, so I would say that there's always been a need within policing, within intelligence analysis, and particularly when there's too much data to hand to process. That's the problem, and that's the let's say that that's the first problem that forensic analytics solved. We've moved on we still solve that problem with our key piece of software, the CSAS tool, but we've moved on indeed to solving many, many other problems that that policing faces. But it generally tends to be with the complexity and the volume of data that intelligence analysts and investigators are faced with. And way back then, as I say, it was the early 2000s when I started, the volume of data was the problem. It was a huge amount of information that that would come in on multiple, I'm showing my age, but multiple floppy disks quite frequently in brown envelopes. Thank goodness you can now download the data you need from the disclosure systems that have been built in order to serve it up to you. But the challenge was, you're sitting there at a desk as an employed intelligence analyst with all the training that you've been given in how to carry out the art of intelligence analysis, the science of intelligence analysis, and you have some data that needs to be processed and tidied up before you can do that analysis. And that work can take a couple of weeks sometimes. It really can. Then sometimes your deadline is coming up close and you've got half a day left to do the actual analysis and to report on the analysis. That's the problem that needed solving. It's handing off that processing job to a tool that will do it for you, so that seconds later you can begin the analysis and you can focus on the job that you were taken on to do. So that's the need. That's the gap that was, as it were, in the market that needed to be solved.
Yes.
I think I was going to say, Andrew, actually, I think you've been a bit kind saying it's a couple of weeks. You know, on one of my first investigations page, I think I was looking at Vodafone data, and Andrew's touched on the sheer volume of data. When we talk about comms data, the sheer volume of it all, and its complexity, you know, it's complex data when you look at it in its rawest format. And if you're working on a very large investigation, as invariably you are, if you're working at a regional level, perhaps you're looking at a conspiracy, and that conspiracy may have ran over a number of years. So you could potentially be looking at, you know, data that covers or that spans a number of years for multiple subjects. And that is complex and that is daunting. And I think Andrew's touched on it there. There's always been a need for this sort of automation of parsing that data or processing that data. There's always been that need. And I remember when I worked in law enforcement, and we used to parse that manually. You know, you'd get all this data through, reams and reams of data, tens and tens and tens of thousands of rows in Excel. And I had to go through it and parse it. And like I say, my first job took 6 months just to cleanse the data. That 6 months just on that, which is absolutely mind-boggling now when you think back and you look at the difference that software, the CSAS software, has made to the lives of analysts who now can spend their time actually doing their job, you know, actually doing the elements of analysis that they're employed to do, rather than spending all that time parsing data. So what I like to say is CSAS has taken the pain out of that particular job, and it does it all for you in a way, because it automates the processing that can be automated, and then it leaves people, the analysts, to do the analysis and actually start really drawing inferences and conclusions from the data, because that's their job, essentially. Not the parsing that comes as a prerequisite to that, that pain's been taken out by the software.
Yeah,
I'd agree. Yes. Yeah. Now that analysts can focus when it comes to that sort of data, anything that's temporal, any time-stamped data, any geographical data, anything that can be parsed, anything that can be stored in a database can now be brought together. So you can have disparate amounts and different types of data from different sources brought together to help you tell the story or uncover the story. And then the next need that is out there to this day is the training, the vocational training in the art of intelligence analysis. And that's one of the next things that we identified as a firm that needs to be supported within policing. There are standards out there for intelligence analysis. There is very little in the way of resource available to train new intelligence analysts in the art of intelligence analysis or investigators in the art of investigations. And experienced analysts and experienced investigators also need continuing professional development. And so we've broadened our portfolio. We used to teach software and telecoms. We still teach software and telecoms analysis, the use of software and the analysis of telecoms data. But now we've got a broad portfolio where we actually do intelligence analysis training according to the College of Policing standards. We've got niche courses that teach people how to use Excel to its greatest potential within the field of law enforcement. We have radio frequency surveying training and a wide range of other courses as well. But we're looking now at the profession of policing, law enforcement, intelligence analysis and investigations in the round, and serving up training really that helps people get their job done one way or the other. So not just the technical now, but also the vocational.
Yes, and that's very important in terms of developing as an analyst and other roles people may be involved in. So for the listeners that we've got listening on today's podcast, could you please, talk about this tool you both keep referring to and clearly explain what this tool is and what it does?
Oh, wow. Well, I think we're both as excited about answering that question as each other. Who shall we toss a coin, Jenna?
I'll let you start, Andrew, and I'll chip in.
Okay. Well, let's define the problem first of all. We said already that it's past amounts of data. The origin of the problem is with the diversity of data formats that you find with information that's provided to you in law enforcement by telecoms companies. We have a vast number of telecoms companies operating within the UK, indeed worldwide. A great many of those companies are actually only owned by a small number of major conglomerates, and they all have their own internal systems for generating data for billing purposes and for making those businesses run. And then law enforcement comes knocking on the door and says, we'd like a bit of your data, please. Here is perhaps in the olden days, a production order for some information. But now, of course, we have full-on disclosure systems, which are mandated under law underneath the IPA Act of 2016, which if your form filling is done correctly, the telecoms company is mandated to provide you with the information that you've asked for. You receive that data and you find that a Vodafone batch of data looks nothing like an O2 batch of data. You've got two telephones to compare. You need to standardize the data so that you can look at them in the round and look at the way two individuals using two separate telephones have behaved, perhaps in tandem with each other or how they've corresponded with each other. The reality of investigations nowadays, of course, is that we're often talking about more than two phones and indeed multiple files of data from the telecoms companies relating to individual telephones. So vast amounts of disparate data from different sources that looks different, that when it's put together should tell a story. And we're now, of course, talking about other data sources, information from other devices, from cameras, from GPS trackers, from drones, from ANPR, and from any other source that you can think of that law enforcement has access to. It all comes from different proprietary systems that needs to be standardized before it can be looked at in the round. That's what CSAS does. The tool CSAS takes data from different sources, normalizes it, and allows you to look at it with clarity. It allows you, once the processing has been done, which takes seconds, to look at a list of events from different sources that came from different sources, telephone calls, ANPR results, anything, handset content downloads as well, of course. to look at them in tables so that you can see them in order, to run analyses on those tables, to run filters on those tables, to look at the geographic perspective on all of that data, to ask it to show you a journey that may have taken place, to show you a collection of points that might all have been created within a certain period of time, or indeed to do straightforward traditional analytics or data visualization analytics. So bar charts that show the frequency of calls over time, analytics to see, to enable you to establish whether or not perhaps a particular car and a particular telephone may have been in the same place at the same time once or many times over, to look for patterns in the data, whether that would be through the analysis of graphics or tables or a combination of graphics, tables and maps. So the analytic function is particularly powerful, and that's really what we're working on really continually, is improving the ability of the system to draw in data quickly and to enable you to see that data at the other end and to analyze and to interrogate the data at the other end. And at the core of it all is our background in data science and expert witness work. The coding that goes on at the heart of the tool is guaranteed for delivery at court. We're talking about evidentially sound outputs at the end of the day. And I think that's one of the market differentiators for a tool like this. So that's a real whistle-stop tour. I do wonder, Jenna, is there anything I've missed out there or that needs to be added?
Well, I think that's a very eloquent description, really, of the software. There's only one thing that I'll say, Paige, and that's just to draw something out of what Andrew said there when he talked about the parsing, and he said, you know, it can take just a number of seconds. Now, comparatively, me completing that parsing manually, that's what I was referring to earlier, as taking me potentially months, and on my first job up to 6 months, because the data was so complex. And Andrew touched on it there as well, that, you know, when CSAS was first born, it really focused on the parsing of that data. And as it's grown and it's evolved organically over the last number of years, there's been additional features added into the software. So the analytics that Andrew spoke about there, and he was talking about how much power there is behind the analytics, the sorts of inferences and findings you could draw out of those analytics, and the mapping, of course, and you've touched on it there, Andrew, the mapping of cell site data and all that sort of stuff is now built into CSAS itself. So what started off as a parsing tool that could parse or cleanse or process your telecoms data now does much more, and is much more well-rounded because of the number of features that's actually housed within the software itself. So it's advanced over the last number of years, I'd say, but still the power of the software, you know, the cleansing, the power of the and the speed of the cleansing is really, for me as a practitioner who used to work in the field, is beyond belief in terms of time savings and efficiency.
Yeah, and I will add as well, I think that the credit for that goes to, yes, the talented people and the expert witnesses and the data scientists who work for the firm and indeed founded the firm. But we would be nowhere today without our community, and our community started to grow immediately that the tool was made. Our expert witnesses, our founders, were using CSAS software to do the work that law enforcement was engaging them to do, within the remit of their jobs as expert witnesses. And immediately law enforcement was looking over their shoulder and saying, that's amazing, we could do with that. Very quickly, we became a company that was selling that software. We started selling it to law enforcement, and law enforcement analysts came to us and said, this is fantastic. I like the way it does this. Could it possibly do this as well? Could it possibly do that? And our user community grew from perhaps two or three people to now hundreds of people, if not thousands of people in the UK and worldwide, who engage with us on a daily, daily basis. We get inquiries all the time through the support line, on our monthly user clinics, and when our account managers engage with our users as well. And those feature requests, those questions about the nature of the data itself, those sort of consultative questions that filter it back to HQ every single day, have driven the development of the tool. So it really has been driven by the community, and therefore the tool really does help intelligence analysts and investigators in their job with no fat. There's no fat on the bones there. It really does exactly what it needs to do. And then when a feature request comes in on a Tuesday afternoon, perhaps, changes could be made and features can be added with appropriate governance to the process of developing the software within days, and users can be newly empowered very, very quickly. So that's why it's such a big and powerful tool as it is nowadays. It's been driven by the community.
Yes. So I'm listening to all of this and I'm excited by it, to be honest, because there's nothing better than the decision-making process being assisted in such a positive way. But with my sort of researcher's background, I'm wondering, how long does it take for analysts to learn these skills to use this software? Because as we've seen through past literature and, you know, work around intelligence analysis, we found that police culture can be a challenge, it can be a problem in terms of adopting new skills. So how have you both found the rollout then of this new tool?
Great question. Jenna, I think you used to use CSAS, didn't you, in your working environment? What was your experience of the adoption of this and other tools as well?
I did use CSAS just briefly, actually, because again, I'm showing my age, but it came into play at the region that I worked in not long before I resigned, I think. So one thing I'll say about the software is that it's intuitive. So once we'd actually purchased the software, very little training was required in the first instance, because it's a very intuitive piece of kit that you can work your way through. In terms of learning how to use the software in its fullest capacity and capability, it didn't take me long at all. And I think that's because, and it's something that Andrew just touched on there, is firstly, we obviously provide training courses in how to use the software, different lengths and to different levels of expertise. But also because we have, and because the founding members of the software have always been so well connected to the community, I would quite frequently have a lot of exchanges with one of our founding members, Joe Hoy, who would quite happily pick up the phone and explain to me anything that I wasn't, you know, quite hitting the mark on. So for me personally, Paige, I've always found it an intuitive piece of kit. So it didn't take long in terms of learning how to use the software. It didn't take long at all.
Yeah.
Just to say that nowadays, of course, we do have a full training program for the software. We have a variety of different levels of training as well for the software and our other tools as well. And as a recipient of CSAS training now from us, you will achieve CSAS certified user status, which will last for a set period of time and can then be refreshed by coming back for CPD events and so on, or becoming part of achieving elevated status within our user community as well. And so the training that we offer is either live online over Teams, or indeed over Zoom. You can also do e-learning at your own pace. And when you complete that training, which can take sometimes only a few hours, actually, the e-learning is a very, very good way to embed all of the learning that you need to get off the ground with CSAS. But when you've done your training, you're a certified CSAS user, level 1, 2, or 3, and we're working indeed on a level 4 as well. And we keep track of people's progress. And indeed people's certifications as well. So we do make sure to touch base with people over the course of a year. That would be users on the ground, but also key decision makers within their organizations, perhaps the senior analyst who's been responsible for purchasing the training in the first place as well. And we do training needs analyses periodically. And we will touch base with an organization, usually a police force, find out where the needs are, find out where the support calls are coming in from, and what the topics are that those users are asking most questions about. And we will tailor the training and update the training accordingly and use that training to grow that community, again, to grow that user community and to make sure that they have everything that they need in order to do their jobs.
Yeah. And you have the monthly user clinic. Am I right in thinking that's like a drop-in sort of session for analysts and others just to ask questions? Like Jenna was saying, you can just pick up the phone and ask a question.
Yes, and that is great fun. That is great fun. The first couple of user clinics really were pure user clinics. We would open up the line, and users would jump on. We're talking in the hundreds now. Usually every month we have more than 250 people register, and give or take around 60 to 70 or 80% of those will then tune in and sit with us for an hour, perhaps 2 hours at the end of every month. So it's a nice way to end the month, actually. But as I said, people would volunteer questions live over the line, or they would write them in over the chat window, or they would feed questions to us on email in the few days preceding. And then we would have a good full hour talking about the tool. But it's grown into something much more than that, hasn't it, Jenna? It really is it's an event every month now.
Yeah, it is actually. And like Andrew mentioned there, initially when it first started, people would just drop into the session. It's now run right into the hundreds, and they would ask questions of the software and want to discuss it. And I think for us, putting ourselves in that position as trainers really shows our trust and confidence in the software itself. We're quite happy to open the floor and just take questions from potentially hundreds of people during a session and deal with those questions direct. But now it's sort of changed format slightly, in terms of we try and identify pertinent issues in advance of the clinic, and perhaps focus on a particular feature, or we focus on a particular new update. If there's going to be a new update, then we'd actually spend a lot of the time talking about that, and then invite questions on that specific area in itself. So it is something that's growing. I feel like it's going to grow even more, actually, Andrew. And I'm glad you said it's good fun, because it's going to continue every month, probably for the rest of time. And it's a free event as well, Paige. There's no cost incurred. It's free. It's for all of our user base, all of our client base. And again, I think it's that direct connection is valuable. That direct connection. Because as well, we take on, I know Andrew touched on this, we take on any recommendations. If people say, hey, Jenna, that's great that it does that, but perhaps could we maybe have this? Because that would save me a lot of time, because I've got to do that manually at the moment. But actually, if you could embed that into the software, that would save you a whole bunch of time. And we can respond to that. We can respond to those sorts of requests. And if it's a viable feature that we can add into the software, then we will try and do that. We've got the flexibility and we've got the expertise within our development team to be able to respond to those sorts of requests. So it's a valuable forum, I think, and something that long may it continue.
Indeed, yeah. Yeah, and it's been nice to have guest speakers in recent months as well. Mm. that would include serving police officers as well, just to talk about discrete areas, topics that we find interesting and that the audience finds interesting. Also, expert witnesses from different fields. We're talking to drugs expert witnesses about how they use data to inform their decision making about the reports that they put out. Barristers, you know, professionals from around the community, from around this sector, who have interesting things to say, sometimes specific and particular things to say about CSAS software, yes, but also about the wider, the broader issues that are pertinent to the job of investigations and intelligence analysis. So we will have people coming on and talking about, for example, issues around safeguarding, around county lines, or indeed any drug dealing issues, or barristers to come on to give us perhaps a few pointers on the way that they might prosecute or defend a certain type of case. So we're showing the breadth of our experience and indeed our network, I think. And that's why it is really starting to look a great deal more colourful than just a software clinic every month.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
And what I like is past research that I've conducted, and I've spoke with analysts and I've interviewed them around, you know, their job role, and maybe not necessarily understanding, you know, their role fully because there's no clear guidance and those kind of factors, is that you're right, and you've hit the nail on the head. You're providing a network and a support community for analysts and others that are, you know, involved in the decision-making process, to come along and to network with other analysts and learn off each other. And Jenna, I don't want to talk on behalf of yourself here, but I feel like that's important. You know, being an analyst, you need to talk with other people. And myself and Danny, who's also part of the ACIA, we had a presentation for the National Analyst Conference last year. I think, Andrew, you attended, and we discussed about continuing, you know, your professional development. And I think this is a great way to, you know, praise and push analysts to be the best they can be.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Paige, and you did take the words out of my mouth, really. It's vital. Sharing expertise and sharing experiences is vital in growing as an analyst, because we know, or certainly I know, my experience is formal training isn't always there within law enforcement, not always, depending on funding. And so having the sharing experiences and sharing knowledge is absolutely vital in developing, absolutely vital. So yeah. I absolutely agree.
Yes. And also with, you know, on sharing information, I'm aware that you work with academics as well. And I, you know, I guess both of you think this is very important to do, as well as myself being a researcher. I'd love to tap into your findings and how you guys are doing with this tool. But it is important, right, to reach out to academics, because we ride on this stuff.
Oh, yes.
We look into this, we want to know how the operation's working. So what's your stance on an academic partnership, and how's that going for you?
It's tremendously exciting at the moment. Paige, you know, of course, we've had some very interesting conversations with yourself about your own work and the national intelligence model and its application to policing. So I'm very excited about the what we could do in that sphere. And of course, we do employ a number of ex-intelligence analysts, and we have a number of links back into intelligence analysis in practice, practitioners on the ground, and it would be fascinating to see where we could make a difference there. Certainly what we've done in the past and what we've got live at the moment would fall into perhaps a couple of different brackets. Firstly, we've got a long-standing relationship with University College London and the Department of Forensic Science there. One of our founders, Joe Hoy, has regularly every year attended their master's degree training program and delivered a workshop on the science of cell site analysis as it relates to law enforcement and the forensic opportunities that can be found there. So we've had a number of students come through that program and benefit from Joe's instruction, and indeed many of them have ended up going on to employment within that particular niche field of digital forensics. That's been really gratifying to see. But of course, what comes out of the conversations with those master's degree students are questions about dissertations and research. And of course, we've always got questions to ask about particular aspects of digital forensic science. And so we get into those conversations with those students and their tutors, and we've had a couple of very, very successful research programs take place. So we've sponsored master students through their research. One last year won an award. In fact, I forget the name of the award that particular student won, but it was the best dissertation of the year within that master's degree. And it was a research project into the reliability of a particularly, I've used the word niche a lot already today, but a particularly niche sector of data analysis within the niche sector of cell site data analysis. This student went out and carried out surveys with our equipment and examined the results of surveys of the radio service provided by telephone cell towers to individual mobile phones, and how that was represented in the data that was obtained from the phone companies that would be provided to law enforcement, and a comparison of the surveys that she carried out against the data that was provided by the phone companies has advanced digital forensics just in the last few months. Now there are cases that are benefiting from the work that student carried out and has published, and we're just delighted to have been part of that, and it's informed our work as well. There's a perfect feedback loop there. If you're interested in questions that need answering and you can help them get answered, the answers will inform your own work as well. So we're delighted with the results of that and the project. Another project in a similar field that took place a couple of years before, we're working with UCL on identifying a potential student for another research project this year. And so digital forensics, definitely, but also another area as well, which relates to digital forensics, and that's the subject of regulation of forensics and the way that labs are run. So ISO 17025 is an international standard that pertains to the correct way of running a lab, a forensics lab, or indeed any scientific lab. And there are moves afoot to institute the rules and regulations around ISO 17025 to or apply them more to digital forensics in the future. And there are lots of questions about how that might affect digital forensics, how ISO 17025 may or may not be perfectly applied to digital forensics, and perhaps there might be certain considerations that haven't really been thought about yet. Now, there are academics who are working on that at the moment, and they are interested, and we're engaging with them, and there could very well be some papers published on the subject of the application of international standards to digital forensics. So that's another one that's exciting, and the more that we do of this, the better. The more that we do of this, the better, because as I've said already, questions get answered. It advances the science, it advances the profession, but also we get access to particularly energetic and interested and interesting people who are coming through the university system, who really want to make a difference, and it's just delightful to help them make a difference.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think most importantly, you know, this partnership, you are contributing to the existing field of intelligence, and you are also helping fill the gaps that need filling to ensure that the process of intelligence works, you know, and runs smoothly as best it can, because ultimately, you know, what you're doing is saving lives some may argue. So it's great to hear the work you're doing with UCL, and I look forward to seeing what else is going to be published and what other sort of work you're doing. But Jenna, in terms of being an analyst, did you ever have a point in your career where you looked at the existing literature and you looked at and read what they were saying about your job, and did you agree with most of it? Or
yes, I suppose so. I think I'm more look at the academia now, and I think, oh, you know, there's a certain area, there's a gap here that needs to be researched. I think the role that I'm in now has enabled me to look at the academia in a different light, and it's been easier for me to identify gaps. So this relationship that we've currently got with UCL is pleasing for the reasons that Andrew's already said, really, because, you know, we're able as a company to identify, okay, there needs to be more research in this particular area. And obviously we've got access to people that are keen and enthusiastic to do that. So I think possibly in my position now, I have a better perspective on that than I did when I was working in law enforcement. To be honest, when I was in law enforcement, I was too busy manually cleansing all my data to think too much about the wider issues.
No, honesty is great. And I think obviously now we understand the importance of developing and looking at, you know, academia and taking in. Andrew and Jenna, you know, it's been great to talk to you today. But before we leave, there's one question I asked all of my speakers, and that is, where do you see your company in 5 years' time?
My goodness. Well, that's a very, very good question, because it comes at a very exciting time for us. So the company is growing. It has grown quite a bit already, and it will continue to grow. We've gone from 3 founders to almost 40 people now, and a number of contractors as well providing us with services. So in terms of size, we are going to see significant growth, but we're going to become more and more firmly embedded within law enforcement in the UK and worldwide. We have software development. Now, our tools are improving all the time, and we are also bringing out new tools all the time. We've got some very exciting developments there over the course of the next year and indeed the next few years. So there should be some very, very useful tools coming out from us. Training is only going to grow because the need is there. Law enforcement practitioners need more training, and there isn't the resource there within the private sector or the public sector currently. Apart from firms like us, where we've got the capacity to deliver at volume, intelligence analysts, digital media investigators, and indeed all other practitioners in the field. And so we're providing that, and we're working on churning out new courses all the time, quality courses according to standards published by the College of Policing. Very excited about that growth there. professional services, where we use our deep expertise to offer, for example, expert witness support services, and also a commitment to improving standards in the profession itself and applying standards to our own work as well, and our work as a hardware vendor. The fourth pillar really is the new tools that we've been developing with our partners and that we have distribution agreements with that will help investigators and specialist practitioners within law enforcement do their work with greater efficiency. Some very, very exciting tools coming out of that. I think that we will, if we were to put it into a couple of words, we will demonstrate capability increasingly over the next 5 years. We've already demonstrated our capability over the last 8 years, but I think what we all recognise is that the job of policing, the job of intelligence analysis, is complex, and it is complicated by the work that needs to be done, but also by the rules and the regulations and the standard operating procedures under which we do our work as well. We recognise that, and we're working on helping police forces address those problems from top to bottom. And so we're increasing capability of policing itself by demonstrating our own capability. So it should be a very, very exciting 5 years to come.
I want to echo what Andrew said there in terms of growth. Continued growth is clearly where we're heading. And if I just look back at the perhaps even just the last year or 18 months that I've been part of this company, the growth has been unbelievable. And Andrew's put his finger on it there. We have there's a market to be served, and we're growing as a company and expanding very, very quickly. Because if we look at our roots, we were comms data experts. That was what we did, communications data. And we've expanded already just over the last year. And we're broadening that. We're digital evidence experts, digital evidence generically, rather than just focusing in on that comms data. So we are expanding in terms of the people that we're recruiting, because we're recruiting from various different fields within the digital evidence environment, within law enforcement, but also outside of that. And that's really what I want to emphasize. We've seen the expansion in the last year in itself, you know, since I've been at this company, and I've got strong beliefs that we're going to continue in that same vein.
And I'm excited to see, you know, what you're both going to be doing along with the rest of your team. And I wish you both all the best with, you know, the projects you've got going on currently and your work, you know, with academia. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you for having us. Thank you, Paige.